the Australian Defence Magazine podcast. Serving the business of defence with Grant McHerron and Ewan Levick.
Hi everyone and welcome back to the show. This episode we'll be chatting with Mark Stevens, Managing Director of Arakan, about Periscope Capital Partners and private capital for defence industry. How are you going, Mark?
Grant, good afternoon. Good to be with you and Ewan again. I think, as we were mentioning before, my fifth outing with ADM, so it may be the most consequential. So very keen to sort of get into the conversation about Periscope today.
Excellent. Well, to kick things off, I'm joined once again by Ewan Levick, as mentioned, publisher at ADM Group. Ewan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, Grant. It's good to be back on the podcast with Mark.
Excellent. Well, do you want to kick things off with the first question?
I will. So, Mark, let's start with the obvious. What is Periscope Capital Partners? How did it come about and what are your goals?
So, if I direct your listeners back to my first podcast, I think we did discuss back in 2021 about this issue around defence industry in Australia being able to access private capital. And those people who, you know, follow me and, you know, listen to, you know, what we've talked about know that it's been a passion project of mine and ours for some time. So, you know, when we did Morand, when we got championed to Morand Precision Engineering back in 2018, we realised how difficult it was for Australian defence industry companies to source capital. And that sort of put us on a bit of a mission, really. But we've been working on this in earnest for the last 3 years, probably. And so Periscope Capital Partners is the genesis of that work. And it's a growth fund. So it's not a venture capital fund or a private equity fund per se, but it has the best elements of both, in my view. So being a growth fund, it allows us to invest from early stage through to late stage. It looks very much like a private equity firm in the way in which it's structured, and we can sort of talk about that in a minute. But really what we're focused on doing is raising and deploying $1 billion in capital into Australian defence industry in the next decade. So we have $100 million already pre-committed. What we're looking for is those, you know, fantastic Australian defence industry companies that with capital and in partnership with us, and that's a really important point as well, can be great for the business of capability delivery into defence. And that's our focus.
So what would you say sets Periscope and the leadership team apart from other funds?
What we've done is we've got some really well-experienced veterans, including, you know, veterans who have commercial experience. And currently those guys have come out of the Arakan business, so that, you know, initially, and we put them in the same room as people with deep capital markets experience. So we've brought them together, and the challenge that we've presented them or that we're leading them through is identifying fantastic capability and then matching that with excellent capital solutions and put that together into those companies and dropping people into those businesses at the board level, what we call operating partners, who work with management in partnership to deploy that capital to make them grow. So that's the model.
Mark, previously we've talked about one of the challenges for private equity in defence being the slow pace of defence decision-making and acquisition, which impacts return on investment expectations and parameters for private equity. Often in the past, those two things have been incompatible. How is Periscope different? What are you looking for in industry? What are your financial parameters? What's your timeline for return on investment and expectations?
I think there are a couple of elements to that. So firstly, what we plan to do is work closely with the capability development teams in each of the domains, Ewan, and to get a very, very good understanding about what's important to them. You know, well, obviously we don't want them to lead us and we don't expect them to do that in relation to what they may or not buy. But as far as thematics and theses are concerned, we're very, you know, we've started doing this already, but having, you know, really detailed conversations with them about what force design looks like and what capabilities that they see themselves needing into the future. So that's the first lens. The second lens is that, you know, there are a number of things out in the public domain at the moment which we're interested in. So we're interested in identifying companies that can be developed to be part of the supply chains, global supply chains for Pillar One. So, you know, we think that the Virginia class program, for instance, has some challenges as far as single points of source for key elements of the Virginia class submarine. So one of the areas that we're going to be looking at is finding Australian companies who with capital can develop to be, you know, suppliers into that program and astute as well. Obviously, AUKUS Pillar 2, I think there are some areas there, probably not quantum. We think it's a bit early, but some other areas within AUKUS Pillar 2 where there are some Australian companies, again, who are, you know, relatively early stage, but with capital who could be outstanding in AUKUS Pillar 2. And then there are some other theses that we just like, things like ballistic protection, for instance, which we like a lot because there are, you know, the ADF has a whole suite of equipment that needs to be protected, right? And so, and obviously, you know, I'm chairman at HICOM and I've seen this up close in Australia, in the UK, in the US, and we just think there's a great opportunity there. So, you know, we've probably got, a dozen areas that we're sort of already started to do deep dives on. And I think that as far as our early investments are concerned, they'll be somewhere in that space that we've explained.
So that was actually my follow-up question. So, you know, interestingly, you said you were talking to Australian capability teams, and this is focused on developing a sovereign Australian defence industry. But obviously, you must be talking to the US and UK capability managers then on what they need. And the opportunity for Australian industry isn't just in Australia, obviously, it's for export.
100%. And so we'll launch Periscope in the UK in July at Defence Catalyst. That's already planned. I think the US is a bit more challenging because they already have a fully formed investment community there who's not concerned by ESG. And so we'd certainly, you know, see the Australian companies that we invest in being mobilised into the US, but we actually see ourselves maybe investing in UK companies as well. And so that's why the UK will be our second port of call. But in any business that we invest in, I think one of the angles that we'd be looking for is its ability to be mobilised into the US, absolutely.
One of the things that's come up recently is, of course, supply chain resilience. We've also got issues with getting people. We're finding it very hard to recruit. And, of course, all companies want profits. So how do you see Periscope boosting that for the companies you're involved with?
Yeah, so we're not going to invest in everyone. I think we need to be clear about that. And, you know, I think people might, you know, say to us, well, you know, you're backing winners. And I think we want to be sort of clear about the fact that we can't be the solution for everyone, but certainly those companies that we invest in, if you know, look at the private equity deals that we've worked on in Arakan in the past, all of them have resulted in significant increase in defence revenue. All of them have involved, you know, a significant increase in staff. You know, if you look at EPTEC as an example, you know, I think the headcount there for defence has increased by 200%. Those businesses are all much, much better off as a consequence of the interest and investment by private equity and the discipline that is a consequence of those investments. So, you know, we think that our involvement is going to result in is a greater level of capability available to the ADF, and also, you know, to pick up on the government's focus, you know, significantly increased headcount in those companies that we do choose to invest in. So we think that's the good news, but I just want to sort of temper people's enthusiasm by understanding that we're not the solution for 3,200 Australian defence companies that are in the ecosystem. But, you know, we do want to write checks probably up to $50 million. So that's our initial focus. And, you know, we do see ourselves as being an opportunity to invest in, you know, a significant number of companies.
Mark, can you talk us through what an Australian SME might expect if it was to engage you? What's the process of applying for capital? If successful, you know, what sort of due diligence?
So our website's up and ready to go, and it does have links in there for people who, if they wish to approach us, they can do so through the website or through an email, which is pitch@periscopecapitalpartners.com.au. In the first instance, those pitches will come to me as the managing partner, and, you know, in the first round, we'll have a look at them. So what we do want to do is we do want to engage one-on-one with each company that's seeking capital. And that'll either be us reaching out to them, which, you know, tends to be the model currently, or, you know, companies using the website to connect with us with an idea about, you know, attracting investment. And then we'll go through a process which effectively looks like us having a look at them as far as our you know, theses are concerned from an interest perspective. That's the first lens, I guess. The second one is, do we think there's a commercial return for investing by investing in that business? And then thirdly, and maybe, you know, just as importantly, you know, through our involvement, do we think that those businesses can be better from a capability perspective for the ADF as far as its mission is concerned? So they're the sort of three parameters that, you know, that we'll be looking at. And yeah, that's where we'll start. You know, I think that as our geopolitical situation worsens, you know, what I'm guessing is that the nature and focus of Periscope will change as well. But that's just where we're starting.
Can I ask, Mark, on the commercial return criteria? Can you go into a little bit more detail on what you might be looking for there? Is it likelihood of an eventual contract? Is it scalability? Is it alignment with the DSR?
The way in which we're thinking about it, Ewan, is so if we take money from the National Reconstruction Fund, for instance, their expectation is when they deploy capital that they'll receive in return the bond rate plus 4%. So it's at 8 or 9% on their investment, which is pretty cheap money for private equity, frankly. So, you know, we would be looking at providing, you know, something like private equity returns, not venture capital returns, but private equity returns to our investors. I think the challenge with defence, and I know you haven't asked me about ESG yet, but I'm sure that question's coming. But I think the challenge for some of these businesses, and I think about companies like Skyborne in this regard, who I know we've talked about on this podcast before, but, you know, a great Australian business that exists in what we were calling front of the barrel. So it's delivering lethal force in the fight. We like that business a lot, but frankly, that's a business that if we were to invest in it, it's probably going to take a series of investments, not just one, for them to realise their full capability. And then, of course, the challenge becomes, well, how do you exit, you know, to get your return, shareholder return? And so, you know, inevitably, I think that for companies like that, they can exit. Well, there are two exits probably. There's either a listing or there's a sale, right, a trade sale to another defence company. It's unlikely that another private equity firm would invest in them, you know, in 2024. When we get to 25, 26 or 27, things could be quite different. And one of the goals that we have for Periscope is that by demonstrating that you can invest successfully into defence industry, that there'll be other Periscope-like funds who choose to follow us into that sector. So we do want to lead a change in financial services in this country around their preparedness to be investors in the defence mission and the defence challenge. And so we see that as being a very important part of what we're doing in Periscope.
Well, Mark, because you mentioned it, I can't not ask. How are you going to overcome the ESG challenge?
Yeah. So the first 100 million, Ewan, that we've raised is almost entirely ESG free.
Okay.
Which is a really interesting position. So our goal is to raise and deploy $300 million by the end of FY25, right? So that's 15 months away. We'd like to have raised $300 million by Christmas. We have 100. The next 200 that we think that's coming is going to not be ESG constrained either. So that'll give us $300 million roughly of ESG free capital to deploy. And it's really been interesting because when we sit down with investors and talk to them about ESG, really the question we ask them is, do you seriously think that an investment in the Australian defence industry is the same as an investment in tobacco products, alcohol, gambling, or coal?
Hmm.
And I think when you ask that question, a lot of people, when they consider their answer, actually do say, well, no, I think about national security differently to those investments. And that's the challenge with ESG, is that ESG was established to enable investors to avoid, market segments that they may have a moral or other issue with. But when you sort of unpack ESG and think about it in terms of securing, the lifestyle and the way of life and the democracy that we all, tend to take for granted, I think, frankly, it does cause people to think differently. And so in sitting with them and having those conversations, we've sort of got through the ESG issue or barrier, and we'll continue to have those conversations. I mean, I've got very little patience with ESG as it relates to national security. But, we have had those conversations and we've got a very, very good result, and we're hoping to continue to get results like that, for the next 2 or 3 years as we sort of build towards raising that $1 billion target that we've set for ourselves.
So in other words, it's redefining ESG.
Yeah, well, I think it's questioning it, frankly, the premise of it. I think the foundation of it is weak. I think that the problem with ESG come from the fact that we have a financial services sector which doesn't have defence experience. So people haven't served in defence. They haven't worked in defence industry, which is, for other sectors, people in private equity have worked in agribusiness, they've worked in healthcare, they've worked in software as a service or, in IT or whatever it looks like. And so ESG becomes a very handy thing to hide behind, rather than admit that they don't know about it. And frankly, in Arican, the private equity firms that we work with use us to help them navigate that. And so, we want to bring that experience into this space, but use it to help our investors navigate that for themselves, to get us to a point where they're comfortable for us to invest in a Skyborne or one of those defence companies that traditionally would have absolutely no chance of raising capital here in Australia.
Do you think that ESG is a reason why private capital hasn't taken off in Australia for defence industry? It seems like it wasn't getting much investment even before ESG. So how are you finding it, and how are you going to address that?
I think it's twofold. So I think probably the most, the biggest single impediment is this lack of experience and lack of knowledge and understanding. So where you have that, it just causes risk in the investment, right? So I think that's the most biggest contributor. And you see that across venture capital in this country. I think ESG has become a bit of a excuse rather than a genuine reason for not investing in it. In defence industry. And again, by doing the investment that we'll be doing, we want to demonstrate to people that the terms ESG and national security should never be discussed in the same context. They shouldn't be in the same sentence, and they shouldn't be a part of the same consideration. And I think you guys have known me long enough to know, we can talk about it all day or we can do something about it. I'm much happier, being mobilised to do something. And so we want to lead the conversation here in Australia on ESG and defence industry by demonstrating that it can be done and be done well.
Mark, I think it's safe to say this is probably the most significant private equity initiative launched in the defence sector, at least in the time I've been with ADM. $1 billion is a lot of money. What's the reaction of the government been to the creation of Periscope?
So look, I'd have to say that Pat Conroy in particular has been enormously supportive of what we've been doing, which I'm deeply thankful for, because certainly in our conversations with industry super funds, for instance, he's sort of led quite a lot of our engagement there by helping us connect to people. So we couldn't be happier as far as the way in which the government has helped us, and notwithstanding that it is budget week at this stage, Pat's going to do a formal launch for it at the Periscope on the 13th of May. So, I'm very, very appreciative that he's made himself available to do that. We've talked, previously about whether the, government should be doing more for defence industry. And I think defence industry as a group has been very critical of the government in that regard. And, frankly, I don't want to get into the middle of that. But what I do want to say is that we think we're the missing piece, right? So the government has a role to perform, which is around settings and policy. Industry has its role to perform around delivering capability for the ADF. And effectively what we've got, this vortex in the middle, which is a lack of capital to make it happen. And so, what we're about is solving that so we can have probably more appropriate relationships between government and industry, and industry and government through the lens of the capital market. And I think that's the conversations we should be having in this country. We're mature enough to be able to do that now. It's the conversation that occurs in the US, not so much in the UK. We're not copying the US, but we think we can have the Australian version of that, and we think that Periscope's going to lead, can lead the development of that fully formed capital market support for defence industry, so that it can do what it needs to do without having to be stimulated by the government.
So, Mark, in that way, the government sort of bookends Periscope. On the one side of the book, you've got Pat Conroy being supportive of the launch and supportive of the concept. But on the other side, you've also got government as the decision maker and the capability manager that will ultimately determine the ROI for your investors. But if you think of that, I suppose, instead of bookends, and more of a triangle where you've got Periscope, the ministry, and the department on each point, that means the ministers are going to have to be talking to the department and changing perhaps the culture in there a little bit to be amenable to the ROI expected by private capital, or at least provide the certainty that your investors might be looking for.
Well, look, I'll tell you something which most people will find surprising and maybe unexpected, is that when we first created Periscope, we thought it was going to be a venture capital fund. Right. And when we talked with Chris Stiebel and Fran Rush in particular, they were fantastic as well, quietly. And it was their idea that we do a growth fund, not a venture fund.
Yeah. Well, that says everything.
And that really changed, that really moved the dial for us, because we're struggling to sort of understand, what the model should look like. And I think effectively we were locked into the financial services model. You have angel investors, venture capital investors, private equity investors, institutional investors. And really what that suggestion did was it really made us sort of sit back and say, well, we shouldn't be using the lens of financial services to think about this. We should be using the lens of defence industry. And if we've got capital to invest, well, why do we have to be locked into one of those models? If we've got the capacity to do it, then why wouldn't we be looking across early stage through a late stage, right? So that's the first thing. I think the second thing, which is a very, very early conversation that we've started to have, is if we did get funding from someone like the National Reconstruction Fund, so it's government money, are we able to interact with the department in a different way to fast track investments in companies who can then deliver outcomes to the ADF because we're deploying government money? So do we need to be locked into a competitive process in a tender or whatever it is, if what we're doing is taking government money into our fund, deploying it efficiently and effectively into defence industry? Is there not another type of conversation we can have with the government and with defence about how those companies may be able to be engaged by defence? And if you think about what the DSR was talking about thinking about different ways for acquisition, I think this is one of the ways, right? It's not about making, as DEFCON, more efficient. because all the levers are already there to do whatever you want to do effectively. It's not really about, as far as the existing process is concerned, about shortening that, which is a cultural problem rather than a process problem, in my view. It's about, as a consequence of this construct, can you have a different type of relationship between government, defence and the capital markets, using government money to fast-track outcomes, capability outcomes for the ADF? And I think you can.
So it's sort of in some ways like the US other transaction authority model, the OTA, which from my understanding results in quite bespoke contracts, particularly between the US Army and industry, and that may be prototyping, it may be production, but each one is unique.
Yeah, look, there is a if we look at the Digicel transaction that the government did a couple of years ago, where they wanted to buy, so Digicel is the business that provides most of the mobile telephony across the Pacific. It came up for sale. The Chinese government was interested in purchasing that asset. We believed it was in our national interest for us to own it. The government deployed capital to Telstra, and Telstra bought Digicel, right, which is a fantastic national security outcome for Australia. Probably not talked about enough in my view, but so we do have these examples that we can look to about where you can deploy government capital in a way which gets you a really clever and sensible national security outcome. And so we're not saying that our investments will be Digicel, but we do think there is an opportunity to think differently. So we're hopeful. I think that Periscope can be a catalyst for the sorts of things that the government talked about in DSR, that they talked about it in the Defence Industry Development Strategy as well, about trying to get mobilised private capital. So everyone's talking about it, but I don't think anyone really has a really good idea about how you do it. So we're the idea, right? But what we want to do is we want to stimulate and encourage other periscopes to evolve so that, I think the best thing in the world for us would be that we're competing against another fund like Periscope to deploy money into a good Australian company. For me, that's what success looks like. And ultimately, that's my goal as a managing partner of Periscope. It's about making some money. It's about getting a return on investment for our return on capital for our investors. But it's also about creating a fully formed investment community for defence industry.
Well, Mark, I think that's a really good point to wrap up this discussion. It's been quite fascinating, and I wish you all the success, because if you're successful, as you said, others will follow, and that can only be a good thing for our defence industry.
Thanks, Grant. Look, I think we're very, very motivated to provide the defence industry what they've been calling for more than a decade.
Yep. Well, Mark, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks also to Ewan for joining us for this one.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Mark, it was a great conversation.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you for your time.
And of course, thanks to everyone for listening once again. And don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, you can like us on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice, as this helps others discover our show. Meanwhile, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back in the not-too-distant future with another informative episode.
The ADM Podcast is produced by Southern Skies Media on behalf of Australian Defence Magazine, a YEFA media title. The views of the people appearing on this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Australian Defence Magazine, the Department of Defence, or the guest's employer. If you wish to use any of the audio in this podcast, please contact Australian Defence Magazine via their website, australiandefence.com.au, or via email at defmag@yaffa.com.au.
You've been listening to a Yaffa Media podcast.
Southern Skies Media.